Welcome to The Masterful Art of Self-Care, hosted by Neeti Ubay-Wallace. So thank you again for joining me on this episode of The Masterful Art of Self-Care. So this episode is starting season 3. This is episode 33. So I just want to thank you so much for being really accommodating and patient during the summer break. So I'm back at it again. I've graduated from PT school and just really excited about this next journey, next step in my career. First, I have to pass my board exam, so I'll be doing that in October. So I'll be spending some time studying, but I will still be able to get episodes out to you, at least the interviews, bi-weekly, and then 15-minute shorties and some other stuff in between that time. So I'm really excited and happy to have Dr. Perry Nicholson of Stop Chasing Pain on today's episode. So I actually interviewed him earlier this summer, so I don't remember, I guess it was like June or July, and just finally had the time to edit and, you know, after the break. So really excited to share a lot of gems that he shares on this episode. So thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy.
All right, welcome to Masterful Art of Self-Care, and thanks for joining me today. So today I have a really special guest. I've been trying to get him on to this podcast for a while. So it's Dr. Perry Nicholson, and he is a chiropractor, and he's also has a blog, has a podcast, and has a business called Stop Chasing Pain. So I'll have Dr. Perry just give a brief introduction about himself, and then we'll jump into some questions. So thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I love the name of your show.
Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you very much for reaching out. Well, where to begin? Maybe I can say that, you know, I've been in healthcare probably for 28 years now. I can't believe it's been that long. Started as a chiropractor, and I am still a chiropractor under my professional licensure, and I became one because I got hurt bodybuilding. I was a bodybuilder in my early days, and I hurt my lower back, and my chiropractor was the only person that could put me back together. And I thought, you know, this might be something I could do. And they were very supportive and said, absolutely, you can. So I decided to go to school to become a chiropractor. But along the way doing that, I was always fascinated of, first of all, why people would get hurt or get injured. You know, the non-traumatic, of course, right? But like, why do people get pain? But then, and I would want to learn how to treat them, but then I became more fascinated about, well, why does it always keep coming back, right? That's what Stop Chasing Pain is. And I quickly learned along my journey that it's got to be more to our health care, or our health as individuals, than just treating pain. So then just began to study that up until now, and I'm continuously studying that every day.
Cool. That's great. And I know for some people who might have heard of you and, you know, possibly follow you on Instagram, so I know you also teach for Rock Tape as well, too. So, so you have the Stop Chasing Pain, and we're going to talk a lot about the lymphatic mojo and the lymph system, but also just like what it is that you do with Rock Tape as well.
Yeah. Well, for those that might not be familiar with Rock Tape is, it's like that athletic tape that you see on TV or at the Olympics or some people wearing, that's on their skin. It's got all these kind of hyper crazy colors on there. And, you know, Rock Tape was a company that I've been teaching for probably 8 years. And I was one of the original 5 instructors when the company began. I've been with them a while. Now they've grown to, oh my goodness, 40 or 50 or more, and then they're all over the world and stuff like that. I always joke around with people that our first master instructor meeting was around a kitchen table in Denver, Colorado, you know, in the early days. And then now our most recent one was down in Cancun, Mexico. So they've expanded out a little bit. But honestly, I enjoyed the one in Denver the most. I like things when they're kind of small and they're just beginning on that one. But Rock Tape has always been very supportive of my journey with what I do to try to educate people. And then taping, actually, that kinesiology type of taping is very helpful for helping someone to manage or alleviate pain in their body. So I use it every day in my office, and I have the honor of being able to travel the world, really, to teach the concepts of the tape.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah, I'm hoping I was able to do a course with Dr. Shante Cofield, and I know she also teaches for Rock Tape as well. So and
yeah, she got to she started in my class.
So, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, well, I taught the class in New York at Spear Physical Therapy in New York, and then Shante was a student there. Mm-hmm. And she approached me after the class and asked, said, "What does it take to become an instructor for Rock Tape, and do you think I could do it?" So I just put her in contact with the powers that be, and then boom, there you go. And
that's awesome.
It's funny that Rock Tape actually posted up last week on their Instagram channel the course at Spear Physical Therapy, the same place where she took my class, that happened about 4 or 5 months later, where she came in and she co-taught. Like, she came on in, and then they said, "Okay, we'll just start to teach a little bit of one." That was the course. And then they posted it up when the two of us were together teaching for the first time. It's great. Small world.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Yeah, no, she and her class, the Moving with the Maestro, and she introduced a little bit of the Rock Tape and how she uses it in the rock pods and everything. And so I'm hoping to, you know, definitely take a class, because I'm in PT school right now and I'm actually finishing up, and they don't really spend much time with kinesio tape at all. So I'm hoping to, you know, take a course so I can learn some more about it.
Yeah, I just taught a course this last weekend on the rock pods and the flossing course, the two type of tools that they teach together.
That's awesome.
That worked great.
Cool. That's great. So I love the name Stop Chasing Pain. And
thank you.
I think when you actually think about it, or when a person actually hears that and stops to think about what that means, I think is so ingenious, because with people with chronic pain, and you know, it's like one thing after another, and it's never, which I think a lot of the work that you do is really kind of getting to the underlying issues, you know, addressing like what's going on, not just kind of covering up the symptoms, but really figuring out, you know, what's going on. And instead of continuing to chase pain from one place to another, from one organ, one body part. And so what I know, you've been in the healthcare field, you know, for a long time, and you've been working with lots of different people. I mean, what was the impetus? I mean, like, I know obviously just seeing how the healthcare system doesn't really provide, you know, that good quality care, at least what people really need on onset, you know, to make sure that they aren't chasing pain. But what made you create this?
That's a great question. Well, thank you very much for the compliment on the name. I actually got the name from a very brilliant physical therapist who is a dear friend and mentor of mine that some people listening might know, or yourself might know. His name is Gray Cook.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, he taught the movement-based systems that I first began to learn, called the functional movement screen and the selective functional movement assessment, which helps people find reasons why somebody might be having some discomfort or pain. And the whole premise behind his work is that it's usually not where the site of pain is. It's usually coming somewhere else. And then I started with his stuff very early on, and I was at a workshop that he was giving, and three words showed up on a white screen in red, and it said "stop chasing pain," those three words. And as soon as I saw that, it's almost like that was the moment. I'm like, that's it. I remember the exact moment that it happened, because I just stopped listening to what they were saying, and I did a immediate search on GoDaddy to see if the internet name was available, and it was. So I took the name, and then I asked Gray. I said, "Listen, I saw that up there. I think it's a great name. Do you mind if I run with it?" And he said, "Sure." So the name actually started there, but it really fit into my whole journey, because you know, of course we need to treat pain, right? I mean, if somebody's suffering and somebody is hurting, but I don't really think that we've when you pain doesn't tell you a whole lot. It only tells you that there's some kind of problem that you have. It doesn't tell you what it is. And it's instinctual to go and treat where it hurts, kind of like mom used to do, right? If your boo-boo hurts, you rub it and it usually feels better.
Yeah.
So human touch has a lot of healing to it as well. But normally, if it's where the problem is, when you treat it there, it shouldn't always keep coming back, right? So there's, I think it's important that people understand there's different types of pain, right? You've got this acute traumatic pain where you slip or you fall, and it's pretty easy to say, well, I know why my knee hurts because I twisted my knee or I fell on my knee. Mm-hmm. But then you can have this chronic, like insidious pain that all of a sudden just out of nowhere, one day you're walking and your knee starts hurting. That's a very different approach mm-hmm. to how you have to look at the knee. And then you have, of course, what's epidemic today, if not pandemic in the world, is this chronic lifestyle diseases, chronic pain that way of how we're living our lives all around. And then what can be tricky is that you can have an acute onset of non-traumatic pain from an issue that's been chronic for a long period of time that you didn't realize. So you have a mixture of, oh, wow, this really hurts out of the blue, but it's always been a chronic problem all along that you have to look for. So it's a classic phrase that Ida Roth once said, who is the creator of the Rothing technique, a soft tissue technique to help people in pain. And I love it because it's so simple and it's so true that where you think it is, it ain't, mm-hmm. is her phrase. So I always treat where somebody hurts, but then I always treat and look somewhere else. Now, most mm-hmm. of my practice is geared towards chronic, very difficult, hard to fix kind of conditions, because the first place I look is not where your pain is quite quickly. And then it's nice to see that with science, the way that things are progressing and how we're studying pain is that they're discovering that pain, and I think it's important for people that are suffering in pain, is that pain is always a protective mechanism of your body. It's your body that's trying to protect you from something. It's not it's not trying to punish you and make your life miserable, even though it's very easy to feel that way when you're always suffering, because I've been there. I know what it feels like. So I started to try to understand pain and ask why the body is doing what it's doing. And my definition that I tell people all the time now for when they say, well, what does pain mean? To me, the way it helps me understand the body is, pain is a request for change. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it. So it's a request from your body, your mind, your conscious mind, and actually more importantly, your subconscious mind. It's these signals that it's sending you to say, listen, I need for you to change something. And in order for anything to change, you have to have some kind of action behind it, right? So pain in and of itself is just an action signal. It's saying, okay, time to do something. I'm just trying to help people understand it's not just the action of treating where the side of pain is. That's where you start, but then you move somewhere else, because sometimes it is that simple. I mean, if something hurts and you treat it there, very often it'll go away, because the body is innately designed to always heal itself. It never stops working to try to heal, because it doesn't want to be sick. It doesn't want to die. It doesn't want to be in misery. It's always trying to heal itself. Mm-hmm. Right. So anything that you can do to help facilitate that is great. But if something can't get past a certain point, or something keeps coming back, I firmly believe that you're just missing something, mm-hmm. right? That sometimes it's just a matter of, we have to get out of our own way. And one of the biggest things we do is we tend to overthink things all the time. Mm-hmm. And we go back to basics, fundamentals, and simple things. And for me, it's human movement. If I can get you to move more of yourself more often and more ways and more environments, you can make a significant and profound change in your level of pain and how you feel, and then your healing.
Yeah, I agree. And I love that movement is a big key piece in your practice. And from a lot of, you know, just what you said, and also a lot of the posts that I've seen that you've posted on Instagram, I think a lot of people have a misconception about pain, and they feel that their body is betraying them or their body isn't doing what they want it to do. And, you know, seeing the body as, you know, almost like a machine or mechanical, you know, dysfunction. And, you know, I really agree with the fact that the body is, it's always trying to find, I'm going to say, you know, to get itself out of pain, but it's always looking to find the path of least resistance. It's always looking to try to find better function or more function, even though there is dysfunction in that body. And I think that the subconscious mind definitely does play a huge role in being able to get that person out of pain. But like just from your experience, I know like 28 years, I'm sure working with a lot of chronic pain folks, like how that's got to be really challenging. It has to be really tough, especially if they've been dealing with this pain for 10, 15, 20 years, for them to really get out of that mindset that their body is failing them, that their body is betraying them, and that, yes, they have that ability to make those changes to get themselves out of pain. Like, how do you address that? How does that conversation look like, or how does it sound like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, pain can certainly be a deep rabbit hole, right? And then, but here's the thing with pain. Pain is 100% of a subjective phenomenon, which mm-hmm. means that it changes based on the person that's having the pain. It's how they're perceiving it. So pain isn't really actually this objective, tangible thing that you can put your finger on and say, this is why you have your pain, and this is why your level of pain is a 7 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing, is that somebody might have the exact same quote unquote tissue damage. So they're finding that pain doesn't equate to the level of tissue damage that you have in your body, which mm-hmm. means that let's say one person can have an injury and say, oh my goodness, that is like an 8 out of 10 in pain. And another person can have the exact same physiological type of injury, and then they say, like, that's a 1. I hardly feel anything. Mm-hmm. So you have to deal at that point individually with each human being on a human level. And I always tell people, kind of jokingly say, that you have to remember there's a human being attached to the piece of meat that you're trying to treat.
Yeah.
And we go on these research projects and we do all these studies and we try to break the body down into these individual parts, even down to the microscopic cellular level. So I can find out what's going on inside each cell. But you have to remember that all these cells have to communicate with trillions and trillions of other cells in the body. And the one thing that was the biggest change for me is that I know it because I studied it, but I really didn't know it, which means that I wasn't applying what I had known. And there's many, many different systems in a person's body that has to work together. Mm-hmm. And when somebody has pain, for instance, most of the time we go after like their musculoskeletal system, like a muscle or a joint or a bone or the fascia, which is the connective tissue. And then people can tell you all these individual things that happen with these different systems, but they're not the only ones that you have to work with. First of all, you have your conscious mind, your the way you interpret the world, right? Mm-hmm. That emotion, for instance, like emotion is very human, right? And that's going to influence pain substantially. That's why we're not rocks and we're people. Yeah. But then you have your cardiovascular system, you have your lymphatic system, you have your organ systems, you have your endocrine systems, and all of these things work as what they call an ecosystem, kind of like out in nature. You can't do one thing to something in nature that doesn't have a reverberating effect somewhere else. And then that's what I was finding, is that many people were feeling some quote unquote symptoms, which we call pain, in an area, say for instance, like your shoulder. But they weren't looking at anything else besides somebody's shoulder. And for me, it was a slow process of that. So let's say, for example, when somebody would come in and say, Doc, my right shoulder hurts, I'm going to do all my examinations and I'm going to make sure that there's nothing really serious going in there, like an underlying tumor or cancer, or they haven't torn something that does need medical surgical intervention. Mm-hmm. And I would absolutely say, listen, you can get some medications to try to to decrease the pain a little bit, because there's no reason why you should have to suffer if you don't have to, right? Mm-hmm. And then my journey began to say, well, maybe it's not the shoulder. So let's say if it was the right shoulder, I would say, well, maybe it's coming from my neck above, which is affecting how the shoulder moves, or maybe it's coming from my hand or my wrist, and I've got weakness in my grip, and thus my shoulder has to compensate. And then that was, to me, was like, wow, that's an amazing way to think, that it's not the shoulder. Then I would go even further out. I would say, well, maybe it's connected to the opposite side hip, because whenever you walk, your opposite side hip has to work with the opposite side shoulder. And then I'd say, well, maybe it's the other shoulder, because one shoulder has to affect the other shoulder whenever you move. And I made great progress with that. I started to make some significant changes by looking at the shoulder that hurt, but then looking other places. But even that, it wasn't enough for me. I had to go further, because then I remembered that all these other systems come into play. And then many people were having issues with their shoulder because they weren't moving well in their organs. Their liver couldn't move well when they moved, or they had irritation in their intestines or inflammation in their liver based on all their years of taking medications or stress or anxiety or food allergies. And you're only as strong and resilient as your weakest and your most vulnerable system. And unfortunately, in medicine today, we break all these systems down into specialization. So, you know, if you have a heart problem, you go see a heart guy. Yeah. If you got an intestine problem, you go see a gastrointestinal guy. You know, it's like nobody talks to anybody else. And I'm like, hello, your body doesn't work like you do. Every single one of these systems feeds off of each other.
Yeah.
And so now what I do is I call myself a generalist, which means I don't believe that I actually have any type of specialization at all. I just look at the whole human body, and I expect that I'm open to finding anything and everything that might be causing somebody's problem. But the one thing that I do know, if I just step back and I think about it logically, that if I've ruled out anything really serious in your shoulder and I can't figure out why it's happening, that it's probably not your shoulder.
Yeah. Right?
So then we'll look somewhere else. And then sometimes they're finding that it's actually nowhere else but your mind. Mm-hmm. Some people hold on. They have physical pain in the body because of emotional trauma in their past from something that could have struck them when they were kids. They're finding that traumatic events when you were younger always hold on to your system and can manifest the side effects 20, 30, 40 years later because you hold on to things. And then that's where you have to now get into the emotional side of pain. Because many people hold on to pain because they don't know who they are without pain. Right? Yeah. I mean, pain is something that can be part of their identity. And it sounds crazy when you hear it from the outside, but it's not, because then when you study the brain, it's very interesting. The brain only does things that it finds are useful. Mm-hmm. The brain is all about utility. And if you could say, well, you know, why does my back hurt? Well, there's something useful about that strategy that your body's doing right now. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it wrong. It's just useful. Mm-hmm. Right? And the back pain is protection for you. So you have to figure out, okay, well, why in the world would my body choose to send pain in my back as something that's useful? Because maybe there's something way more serious underlying somewhere else that your body's trying to protect you from your back. You just don't see it yet. Yeah. And that's how it's a very different way of looking at the body. And that's one of the reasons why when you don't look at the body from an adversarial perspective, like the one thing that I like about studying Eastern medicine, which I've done for a long time, this has started in my work with doing martial arts and studying Qigong and acupressure and acupuncture, is that Eastern medicine has this harmonious, balanced way of looking at the body, that everything needs to work together. Mm-hmm. And that it talks about disharmony, right? Or energies. And then when you want to heal and you want to get better, it's about restoring balance.
Yeah.
Western medicine is all adversarial. I want to attack it. I want to kill it. Yeah. I want to conquer it. I mean, that's really important because words matter. I mean, how you talk to someone are the words that you use to describe your pain or what your body is doing changes your perceptions and your assumptions of what you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. So that is really, really powerful to do. And so it's a combination of many, many of those different factors that have to go into play when you're working with chronic pain. And I've been doing this a long time. And so when I know that somebody has like a chronic musculoskeletal pain issue, like a joint, a muscle, something like that, I usually know that there's something way deeper going on higher up in another system that we need to look at. It doesn't mean I'm going to be able to get them back to 100%, but I do believe that I can help the body make some type of significant change in there so the quality of life can improve just a little bit. But more importantly, you have a sense of empowerment that you don't feel hopeless, because you just have to, what they tell you is there's nothing more we can do for you and you have to learn to live with it. What they mean is there's nothing more they can do from you from their perspective and their paradigm of how they're looking to treat the body. It doesn't mean you still can't do anything. It just means they don't have another drug for you to do.
Yeah.
Or, right? Or another surgery that they can give you. And in Western medicine, thinks that you're done, which I completely disagree with.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. So many gems, like, with everything that you said. Thank you. Like, I think for anyone who's listening to this and is a chronic pain sufferer, I think there's so many takeaways. And I think the biggest thing that you said is really about how, you know, a person who's suffering, who is in pain, how they're talking about their pain, how they're talking about their body, how they're talking about themselves. Yeah, words, they are pretty powerful. So I want to dive into a little bit more about you. And I know, you know, you've been doing this work for so long. And I recently listened to one of your podcast episodes where you spent some time just like talking about your history and what kind of led you down the road. So now we're going to kind of go in towards the lymph system a little bit. And just like your own experience with like your pain and, you know, battling, I don't want to say battling, but, you know, having the experience of having an autoimmune disorder. So if you can talk a little bit about that and then just what led you into the path of really discovering the lymph system.
Sure. Well, thank you. Know, I like talking about the lymph.
If I know. Yeah.
My work at all. Yeah. And most people are like, lymph? What's lymph? I mean, you know? And then when you follow me, you're like, oh, this guy really likes lymph.
Yeah, right? It's awesome.
Well, you know, I think some of our greatest lessons in life, and maybe you can even say sometimes maybe your destiny or your calling manifests itself through our suffering. Right? I mean, that's how you learn, and that's what makes us human. There's always a lesson in suffering. And I mean, I've suffered quite a bit, like most people on this planet in some way, shape, or form. And then, but I wouldn't take it back for anything, honestly, because it led me to be able to discover the stuff that I'm teaching around the world now and talking about now, because I never even would have thought to look at the lymphatic system, which I'll explain in a moment, or look at the body in a different way if I didn't get really sick with an autoimmune disorder. And even that, to me, was a lesson, because I said, why in the hell did this happen to me in the first place, is what I started to ask. And I think that we just assume that's because everybody gets stuff now. It's just like, well, it's just the way it is. And I don't agree. I don't think that that's true. We're designed, we're miraculous to be able to be healthy and have our brains intact and not have all these chronic diseases and memory issues. And people, doctors just say, oh, well, you're 60 or 70, you're just getting older. I mean, that's bullshit.
Yeah,
I completely disagree with that. And then it happens slowly, like most things do, right? It's just like one day you're like, well, I've always been tired, I just work too hard, or I've always had these headaches, or it's just like something that builds up over time. You don't even notice it anymore. And it was a slow progression for me, and then I really just started to have my body turn on itself. That's why they call it autoimmune. That's basically what they say. And even then I'm like, well, why the hell did my body decide to turn on itself? And they don't even have a name for what my autoimmune disease is. Basically, it really doesn't matter to me anyway. I've learned through my studies that I don't really care what kind of diagnosis somebody gives you. The name to me is absolutely irrelevant because mm-hmm. they're all caused the same way, and that's from underlying chronic inflammation. Mm-hmm. Chronic inflammation in your body is what leads to all of these diseases. They just stick a name on it, and but the cause is still the same.
Yeah.
And I just got really, really tired, fatigued. I was starting to have brain fog. I was forgetting things, taking 3 or 4 naps a day, getting a lot of infections in my body, having to take pain medications and anti-inflammatories and antibiotics for all these infections. And you know, I'm just doing what most people would do, right? And mm-hmm. unbeknownst to me, even though I'm in this industry, I was just going further and further down the wrong path. And then I had to leave clinical practice for a year because I couldn't think anymore. I couldn't even remember what I was going to say next. And then I couldn't teach anymore because I couldn't remember what I was going to say when I was standing up in front of people.
Wow.
And so I just had to go through 2 or 3 surgeries as well. And I had a nervous breakdown, basically. I mean, I was really in a bad spot and I didn't know if I was going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to try to rebuild my system by working on other systems of the body. And I did some stuff with my gut. And most people in the world today might see that, you know, if you can help do some things for your gut, change your diet, nutrition, repair your gut, you can start to feel better. Mm-hmm. And I did. I mean, like, I was able to honestly bring myself out of that despair to a pretty good level compared to the misery that I was in, but I just couldn't get past a certain point. And then I had somebody who exposed me to the lymphatic system, and the lymphatic system is one of the systems of the body, right, that I mentioned before. And it's the detoxification, aka the sewage system of your body. So if you go to the bathroom in your house, you flush the toilet, everything goes out, right? I mean, that's the waste system in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your lymphatic system does the same thing for your body because your body has waste inside of it because it has to deal with what comes into it from the outside world, aka stuff that you eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also when your cells are trying to heal themselves, cells break down. And then they have to regenerate. Whenever they break down, they form waste. And that waste has to be eliminated. You have to flush the toilet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't flush the toilet in your house, it's not going to be too nice in your house, right? And
mm-hmm.
it's the same thing that happens with your lymphatic system. The lymphatic system for people is most people is dysfunctional. And then why that happens, that's the way life is in the modern world today. There's many different reasons why it happens. But stress is the biggest one.
Yeah.
And so then you become toxic. And when you become toxic, all that waste stays inside of your body and you get sick. And then you're going to develop chronic disease when you lose the ability to make new cells that work. And I'm going to say that one more time.
Okay.
You get chronic disease and chronic pain when you lose the ability to make new cells that work.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can make new cells that work, you're not going to be sick. That's what healing is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So most of the time, people can't get well because they can't heal. Even if you give it all of the tools it needs to heal, it still has to actually do that process, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the only way it's going to be able to do that process is if you can flush the toilet, if you can get the waste out of your body, and then it can start to heal itself. And I just worked with my lymphatic system for 3 days. And then I felt better than I'd felt in a year. And I was like, oh my goodness, I had no idea. And I thought to myself, I am in the healthcare industry. I've studied the body for 20, this was about 3 years ago then, right? So 25 years.
Yeah.
And I had no idea about the lymphatic system. Because in school, they teach it to you for about maybe 15, 20 minutes, an hour if you're lucky. You don't talk about it again, unless you get cancer. If you got cancer, then they talk about lymph, because cancer spreads through the lymphatic system.
Mm.
And then I said to myself, I can't imagine how an everyday person would have any idea about this, because trust me, their doctors won't have any freaking clue.
Yeah.
And then there's very little information out there about the lymphatic system. When you do find it, you know, it can be a little intimidating, or you're like, I'm not even sure how to go about taking care of it, or why it became an issue in the first place. That's mm-hmm. something that they also usually don't tell you when you study, is why it became an issue. And that's usually what I teach you. And then I just said to myself, I mean, you know what? This really great person in history once said a fantastic phrase: be the change that you want to see in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's Gandhi. And I said to myself, you know what? How about I put something out on it? If nobody else is going to put something out to teach people about it, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. So I created a video. I created a course. I created a technique based on my own experience and all of the stuff that I've learned over my 25 years in pain science and neuroscience and psychology and all these different things to mix together. And it's almost like all this suffering, all this studying, all these things led me to that moment that I needed to be in. Mm-hmm. In order to be able to bring this out to people. And I knew when I put it out there and I started to get the feedback from people, the messages that I would get actually every single day telling me that it literally is astounding, the changes that they're feeling.
Wow.
And a couple of things that most people tell me, I get a few reactions. One is they say, how come nobody ever told me this before? Mm-hmm. Is number one. Number two is, I didn't realize it could be this simple to make a difference in how well I feel.
Well,
because we think, because we've suffered for so long and nobody can find some answers, that's got to be a complicated answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually something that's very obvious but elusive. So they call it the elusive obvious.
Mm-hmm.
It's like right there in front of you. You don't see it, right? It's like every great love story movie. You're looking for the love of your life and it's your best friend who has it to you or a kid. You just don't see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third reaction is usually anger. They get really pissed off that nobody exposed them to this information before. Yeah. And then, so that's kind of brings me to where I am right now. And I'm just on a mission to try to share this with the world for everybody to begin to do, to mix into whatever therapy program that they're doing, or even in just their everyday life as an everyday person, just mm-hmm. to keep yourself staying healthy, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I mentioned to you, like I just purchased it this weekend, so I'm really excited to start diving into it. I'm like in the throes of finishing up like seminars, and I'm graduating in August. So right now, my brain is like focused on that. So you know, as soon as I'm done with that, then I can really dive in. Because I mean, I see the benefit, and I definitely want to try the stuff on myself, and I see the benefit of it, and you know, I have read a lot of the testimonials that people have posted, or that you post on Instagram. And like, it's surprising that it's a system that is so integral to our function, but that is rarely talked about.
It's not
even really addressed. And yeah, I mean, they talk about the digestive system and, you know, being able to eliminate waste and stuff, but this is another way of eliminating waste. And I think, primary, you know, waste remover, but that isn't discussed or even really focused on. And that's what I want to help to bring out, like with this podcast, is really looking at, yes, self-care, you know, but what are different ways that we can implement self-care in areas of the body that have never really been addressed or, you know, talked about or focused on. So that's why I wanted to bring you on. So thank you so much for just, you know, giving a really great description of what the LIMS system is and, you know, what it can do and how it has helped people.
You're welcome. Mind if I tell you a funny story about that? Like, I read a great quote once that resonated with me. It said, you cannot get well in the same environment you became ill within.
Yeah, I like
that. And I thought it was a beauty. You cannot get well in the same environment you became ill within. And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, that means a lot, right? It's the environment of how you think, the people in your life, what you mm-hmm. do for a career. But then I thought it's also the environment that's inside of your body. And the lymphatic system is the biggest controller of the environment inside of your body through the waste. And then if I cycle that back to rock tape, that we talked about at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
rock tape, when you teach the kinesiology tape, they have a technique where you can cut the tape into smaller little pieces. So if I had a big piece, say, that was 2 inches wide, I would cut it into smaller, thinner pieces and spread it out like a fan mm-hmm. on your body. And that's a technique that's designed to help your lymphatics or fluid flow dynamics to try to reduce swelling and inflammation. Mm-hmm. And honestly, when I did tape in the beginning, I didn't spend much time on that topic when we taught about it. We maybe had a slide or two on it, or it's not, I'm like, nothing I really paid attention to with that type of technique at all. Mm-hmm. And now that I cycle back on it all these years later, it was right in front of me of mm-hmm. like, dude, you should have been doing this limb uh-huh. stuff from the get-go, right?
Yeah.
And it's just really funny about how some lessons are always, but your sphere of how you look at the world, you've got this like circle that you're in with all these dots in it. Mm-hmm. So I usually give people an analogy, but you can't see things because it's not in your sphere of reality or perception yet. So if I have like a big circle, and inside of that circle, I have all of these different size black circles, right? Mm-hmm. Hundreds of them. And then in the center, I've got a red circle. If in the red circle, I only see the other black circles all around me, right?
Yeah.
And if I put a blue circle way far outside of the big circle, I can't see the blue dot, even though it's there, because I can only see what's right in front of me. I haven't opened up my mind yet to see yeah. the blue dot. It's always there.
Yeah.
It's just that you're not ready to see it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I jokingly tell people is that I just had to get my ass kicked a lot to see it. That's what the, that I just got, I had to be kicked out of my circle mm-hmm. to see it. Right.
Yeah.
And that's perspective. That's, and I think that's the important thing that we as healthcare providers do is that we all have a different perspective, a different way of looking at the human body. And I do think that people in healthcare, no matter what their discipline are, is that they truly want to help another human being feel better. It's mm-hmm. that they've done a technique or disliked you with physical therapy. It's something that resonated with you, right? That's mm-hmm. in your heart. And for me, it's chiropractic. But I'm pretty sure that we have the interest of the person that we're working with the heart, we're just coming at it from a different perspective. It yeah. doesn't mean, in my opinion, that it's a better perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different perspective. So when anybody asks me, what's the best technique? What's the this or this or this? All of them play a role in helping you get where you want to go. And one time it might work for this person, and the next time the other one might work for that. And I think that the more we can work together and healthcare to help clients, the better.
Mm-hmm,
right? 'Cause everybody wins that way.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. So if we're kind of getting closer to the end, but I wanted to know if you can just talk about what your self-care practice is like. So I know you started out, you mentioned, you know, you did some bodybuilding, and I'm sure with everything that you've done, you know, as a healthcare practitioner, and then especially with this limb system as well, that your self-care has definitely morphed a lot in the last few years. So if you can just give the listeners just like a little insight into what your general self-care practice is like on a, you know, day-to-day basis.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. Well, yeah, I did start off in bodybuilding, and, you know, that's a great sport, but like any sport that you get into, if it's all you do, mm-hmm. you can run into some problems, right?
Yeah.
And because you need to have what I call the three Vs, variation, variability, and variety.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that people can get pain issues if they, especially with movement, if one, they don't move off, right? Mm-hmm. So you're very sedentary. Or two, you do the same type of movement all the time.
Yeah.
So my biggest thing that I've done is that I got away from just doing bodybuilding. And I do lots of other different things. And with the variation, variability, and variety, exploring, I'll do yoga, I'll do martial arts, I'll do Tai Chi. And then I'll be honest with you. One of the things that has been the most transformational for me in my 52 years on this planet is that I just started to walk more. I took up a challenge a year ago to do the 10,000 steps a day challenge, which is not easy to do. It's close to 5 miles, like 4.8 miles. And just doing that, I was like, I can't believe how much better I feel, how much leaner I feel, how much less aches and pains that I would get everywhere, because it is movement.
Yeah.
It is a form of exercise. It's the most fundamental exercise that we do. But we just take it for granted because it's so simple to do. And then when I tell people, you just got to walk, they laugh because they say the same thing. Like, that's it? That's all you got for me? Right?
Yeah.
to do that, right? And then, so for me, is that I recommend for people to just start to walk more. You don't have to start with 10,000 steps. You can start with 2 and work your way up. So for now, my self-care is that I walk 10,000 steps every day. And I started to do also on a daily basis for me what I call inconvenient movement. Basically, most ways that human beings get around now are based on convenience and ease.
Yeah.
It's easier to take the elevator than the stairs. It's easier to take the escalator than this. It's easier to get in an Uber to go 3 blocks than it is to walk, right? You follow? Or it's easier to park right next to the front door and drive around for 15 minutes to find the spot than it is to go at the end of the parking lot. So the small little nuggets of so when something is more inconvenient to do, just start doing 1 or 2 of those a day for me.
Yeah.
Added to my overall movement, which made me feel better, because when you can move, you can actually physically change your life a lot, which is one. And third, you know, I was perpetually dehydrated all the time because, one, I didn't drink enough water, even though I knew that I should. But I also learned through my travels that just because you drink water doesn't mean you're absorbing water. Most people are actually not absorbing water because they're too toxic inside, because the lymphatic system is a mess, so the water can't cross the cell membrane.
Wow.
You just pee it out.
Yeah.
No, that's the person who says, I drink water all the time, but I pee all the time, but I don't feel any better. I mean, that's because you can't absorb it. So what I do now is I tell people to drink what they call structured water. Structured water means that you have to drink something in the water besides just the water. It can't be just water.
Yeah.
And it can be anything. It can be a little tincture of lemon. It can be a little tincture of Himalayan pink salt. You could even put in there a slice of a vegetable that you can put in there. I've had, I'll throw a basil leaf in there or something. I'm really big into essential oil, so I'll pop like a drop of an essential oil in there, and then I'll drink it that way.
Nice.
And then the other one is to either use electrolytes, like get some electrolytes to go in there. And then people message me all the time and say, I can't tell you how much better I feel just because I began to put something in that water. If you can. Those three things, honestly, are my like daily rituals that I do. And I usually encourage people to maybe start to do something like that. And you have these small little habits. I call them LTAs, little tiny action steps.
Yeah.
Little things that you can begin to do. And then you form what they call like a gateway habit. If you want to form a new habit, you want to remove friction in your life and make it easier to perform the habit, right? If you want to get rid of something, you have to create more friction. You have to make it more difficult to do something that you would normally do, right? So say for instance, if you want to get like a good habit, hey, I want to start drinking my structured water. Well, you put the water right next to your bed with your lemon or your lime right next to it, ready to go. So when you wake up, it's there. Friction removed. Think about it.
Yeah.
Then if you want to take a bad habit, like I always check my phone first thing when I wake up, But I don't even roll over and I look at my phone. Well, what you do is you put your phone in the kitchen so you can't do it. So it's harder. You see, you have to make small little things like that. So those for me are kind of my daily rituals, because if you don't do the small little rituals all the time, and you just do these, people usually jump in to try to change these habits and they go really, really hard, fast, and they do everything perfectly hardcore when they begin, like a going to the gym or changing my diet, or I'm going to run, and they do all, they quit like 2 weeks because it's too much.
Yeah.
It's too hard, right? You do small little trinkles in there. So when I give like corrective exercise to people, for instance, I tell people, if I give you one thing to do every day for this next week, can you just do one thing? Yes. I'm going to give them one thing. Because if I give them three, I know they're not going to do it. If they do it, they'll do it for 2 days and then they'll quit. But if they can do one, then they'll do it. Right?
Yeah, totally.
And I'll give them a choice. I'll give them three exercises and I'll have them do the exercises. And then I'll let them, which one did you like the most? Which one did you feel the most comfortable with? Mm-hmm. And that's the one that I have them do. Because if they can do that quote unquote corrective exercise every day, they start to feel empowered. And then the brain actually develops confidence because it's actually able to do something that you feel makes a difference on you. So then you'll continue to add to your arsenal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that, little tiny action steps. Yeah, that's huge. And I love the inconvenient movement. I think that can be a big game changer for a lot of people. And, you know, instead of always looking to convenience and what's easiest, you know, really challenging themselves to not necessarily go for what's harder, but go for, you know, what's inconvenient, you know.
Think about that, right? Like, think about the two words. You can, inconvenient, you could say it's harder, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not convenient.
Yeah.
But say those words, say inconvenient and say harder, and then automatically notice how your physiology changes or what your perception is of what I would ask you to do. Right? So you're much less likely to do something when it's harder. But if it's inconvenient, you know,
you may think it's
semantics, you know, I'll do it. It may think it's semantics, but semantics are what makes you a monster, like makes you a champion. When you can change those small little things like that, make a difference overall. I mean, I love it. Like, inconvenient movement can be just the one simple thing that can make a big difference in your life. And that just that one ripple, right, that, that can happen to where, boom, it can start to splash and spread out. I mean, I love doing that stuff. I travel all the time and I'm in the airport and people take the escalators from the flight down to the, you know, they get to get their luggage or whatever and they're going up and they always take the escalator. I'm the guy who walks right to the stairs. I pop my suitcase up and I carry it up. Everybody watches and thinks I'm nuts, but I got the whole staircase to myself. Right?
Yep.
You know? And that makes a big difference because I'm going to be sitting on a damn plane for like 8 hours. I want to move around as much as I can.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. I hope I have the opportunity to go and take a course with you in the near future. So, I mean,
that'd be fun.
So much already just like in the last like 55 minutes with you. So, thank you again. If someone wants to learn, hear more from you, where can they find you?
Well, thank you very much. It's very easy. You can go to stopchasingpain.com and from there, it'll link you to all of my workshops, all of my social media, everything that you want to find. I'm really easy to get in contact with. So I have a membership site. I have different workshops available. I do consultations online and in person as well. And so I spend most of my time, the social media platform that I'm on the most is Instagram by far. So if you go to Stop Chasing Pain on Instagram, I looked at the last thing. I've got 6,000 posts on there. I'm like, man, I got to get out a little more. 6,000 posts. But, you know, I just love to share stuff. If I find something I think is really cool, I just automatically say, I think maybe somebody else would think this is cool. Let me put it out there and go from there. But, yeah, I'd love to have people reach on out and contact me. And I really did have a great time on your show. And I'm thankful that you asked me to be on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you again. I really appreciate it. So I'll definitely make sure I put just all that website and Instagram information on the show notes. So thank you again. And definitely, I hope people have some good takeaways from today. Oh, I forgot one last question. It's something I'm trying to do for each person. So what is your one guilty pleasure? So we'll finish off with a podcast interview with that.
Oh my goodness. I've got so many of them.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to throw one out at you because, you know, here's my guilty pleasure.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
I love General Hospital.
So really?
Wow. Yeah.
I watched that when I was younger.
Yeah. I still watch it now. I did too.
Yep. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. That's
it's one. Actually about, well, actually it was on here from 3 to 4, but you know, they replay it on YouTube anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a guilty pleasure for me without a doubt.
Okay. That's a great one.
I just didn't expect that, did you?
No, I didn't. Everyone I've been interviewing, they're like, "Oh, chocolate or sweets or something like that."
Let me give you one more.
Okay, yeah.
One more. Yeah. I love Bollywood movies too.
Bollywood, wow, that one's a good one too. Yeah.
When I got to go to India for the first time, it was such a great trip, man. I was like, "Can you guys tell me where I can find Salman Khan?"
Oh, cool.
It was with the Mumbai, but yeah, it just had, you know. Who you are, right? Having fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. Thank you again, Dr. Pereira. So appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. You too.
All right.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Masterful Art of Self-Care. For more interesting episodes, interviews, and really great stories, you can find more information, find more episodes by following the link on the show notes or by going to anchor.fm and / The Masterful Art of Self-Care. You can also follow me on my Instagram page, which is selfcarephysio. So that's at selfcarephysio again. And you can also email me at tia@themasterfulartofselfcare.com. Please share, like, review this episode, and just let me know what you would like to hear next or any particular interesting folks, experts that you would like to have on this episode. So again, my focus, my passion is really sharing, educating, empowering people to let them know that they have the ability, they have the power to bring self-care into their lives. So thank you again for listening.